State versus Turpin.
Good morning. May it please the court, Casey Granis representing appellant Donald Turpin. I'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. A single issue before the court today, whether Mr. Turpin's right to a public trial was violated when the trial court excused a juror, an impaneled juror, during an off-the-record court recess. There are two main questions that inform the analysis. One, whether that proceeding of excusing the juror implicates the public trial right under the experience and logic test. And two, the second question is whether a closure occurred here, whether this off-the-record recess constitutes a closure.
Under the experience and logic test, it's articulated focusing on the process in question. Is the process in question here what to do when a juror becomes ill when the court's not in session?
Well, I agree that the experience test is looking to the process, and yes, what to do, you know, the discussion surrounding whether to remove the juror, the actual decision to remove the juror, that's the proceeding at issue here under the experience prong. And to find out whether the experience prong is met, we look to whether historical tradition supports that such a proceeding has been done in the open in the past.
So the statute that governs removal of sitting jurors refers to, in the opinion of the judge, if the jurors become unfit for physical or other reasons. So the judge is supposed to delay making any decision in the judge's opinion until he's in open court?
Yes. The decision needs to be done in open court. We look to the court rules, CRR 6-5.
Just as a purely practical matter, doesn't that present issues? I mean, during the lunch hour, the juror has a heart attack. Paramedics arrive. The judges can't do anything about that until court's back in session?
Surely the judge can do something about it. The juror can be taken in that scenario.
But he can't be excused.
Not legal, not as a judicial act. Not the judicial
decision. We all know that the juror is going to be excused because had a heart attack and the hospital can't come back. So we all know it. But the judge cannot formally say anything until court's in session.
Cannot enter a formal decision until the court's in session. And I understand why the judge has taken that particular hypothetical of the heart attack, because in that situation, there's this eyebrow raising. Oh, that seems kind of absurd that the judge would have to wait until open court to render a formal decision. That's what the public trial right dictates. That's the argument. But we can come up easily with other hypotheticals that aren't so.
He's got the flu and he's vomiting in the courtroom, in the juror room. He can't do anything until court's in session.
Or a judge says, "Judge, I got a stomachache," and
but that involves some dispute about whether or not the juror is actually ill. There apparently was no dispute about whether the juror was ill, was there? In this case,
well, again, we have a limited record that we're dealing with here, though.
Well,
I mean, on the record that we have so far,
was there any objection or request to inquire further about the status of the juror?
On the record we have, no. There's no objection, no request to inquire further. Although I thought I'll point out that there is a motion pending before this court to create a fuller record on that issue, and that could touch upon whether there was an objection. But again, based on the record, no, there's no objection, no request. But, you know, the case law is clear. There doesn't need to be an objection if in fact, the public trial right is implicated, if, in fact, there is a closure. You know, the lack of objection doesn't waive the public trial.
When you get to the logic prong, and we're trying to analyze whether there's this significant positive role in the function of that process, so what's the significant role of the judge just simply saying, during lunch I found out the juror is sick, the only choices I've got are either continue the trial until the juror gets well or proceed with the trial. I'm going to proceed with the trial, but I'm going to wait until I have to get out on the bench to announce that that's my decision. And in fact, isn't what the court did here almost exactly that? Juror number 3 has been excused because they're ill. We're going to go forward with the alternate. what's significant about the role of that function about waiting till you're in court? Where does the logic prong fit?
Well, in terms of the logic prong, what I'd like to hammer home here is the notion that openness fosters public trust in the system. The appearance of fairness is at issue here. And when a sitting juror is removed outside of the public purview, and then after the fact, it's mentioned almost in an offhand way, but oh yeah, this juror's gone now. From a perspective of a member of the public who had just come back from that lunch recess and found out that this had happened, a reasonable member of the public is going to be asking him or herself, well, what just happened here?
Well, didn't the judge explain what happened?
That the juror was sick and was removed.
Right.
But again, the background to that, what was the nature of the sickness, whether there was any discussion about that, the justification for actually making that decision, all that's not done in open court here. All that took place during off-the-record recess. And as a member of the public interested in an appearance of fairness, that member of the public is going to want to know, okay, what has happened here?
Is there a distinction between a juror being ill and a juror being removed for some sort of misconduct or making some sort of comment that may have caused his fairness to be in question? Is there a difference between those things? Or they all should be treated the same, you think?
Treated the same under the logic prong.
Okay. It doesn't matter that there's a statute and a court rule that both authorize the judge to act if, in his or her opinion, they determines that juror is unable
to. That's
right.
And it's all under the same rubric. I mean, the court rule, the RCW 236.110, dealing with various bases for removing a juror that's already been impaneled, right? That could be for different reasons. One, misconduct could be a reason. Here we've got the purported basis of illness. But it's all in the same category. That's the argument that Serpin is advancing. And when that sitting juror is removed, the proceeding in which that actually happens needs to be open. And that's the gist of the argument.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Kristen Relier, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, representing the state of Washington. This court should affirm Mr. Turpin's convictions for two reasons. First, because the public trial right was not implicated by what was essentially a hardship excusal. And second, because Mr. Turpin has failed to show that a closure occurred. Turning to the first prong, here, the trial court properly dismissed a sick, impaneled juror. It is undisputed that juror number 3 was sick and that he needed to be excused. Mr. Turpin has never challenged below or here on appeal the trial court's factual determination that juror number 3 was physically unfit to serve. Dismissing an impaneled sick juror is most akin to a hardship excusal. And recent Washington Supreme Court case law has suggested that the public trial right is not implicated by hardship excusals. If you look to Russell, which was recently decided within the last month, the court said that the public trial right was not implicated by preliminary hardship excusals and distinguished between hardship and administrative excusals, which really go to a juror's ability to serve at a particular time for a particular length of time, and for cause peremptory challenges that really go to a juror's ability to serve as a neutral fact finder on a particular case.
Underlying the your opponent's argument is kind of this premise that, hey, yeah, you've got all this preliminary stuff that can happen, and that's one thing. It's completely a different thing once the panel's been seated. Once they've been hearing the testimony, then we're in another arena, and that triggers we need a bright line, and the bright line is once they've been seated, anything to do with the juror should be in public. Why isn't that compelling under either experience or logic?
Well, Mr. Turpin has, in counsel, have failed to point to a single case, specifically on experience, that hold that a sick juror must be dismissed in open court. And with regards to logic, when you look at the public trial right values, waiting to dismiss a sick juror in open court does nothing to discourage perjury, one of the values, does nothing to encourage a witness to come forward, another value. really this concern about the appearance of fairness. When you think about ensuring a fair trial, you know, why would Mr. Turpin want somebody on his jury deliberating who's sick? Now, I do think it would be a thornier issue if the jury had started deliberating, but they hadn't started deliberating. And Mr. Turpin had accepted this entire panel of jurors, including the alternate juror who ended up taking juror number three's place.
If Jones tells us that picking the name out of the hat to decide which alternate's going to, which of the jurors is going to be the alternate, if that has to be done in an open court setting because of the potential for manipulation and chicanery, is there a potential for manipulation and chicanery with somebody getting a juror to drop off the panel?
I suppose that there's always a possibility of some chicanery, but Jones was different and distinguishable because it was about selecting the alternate jurors. Here it had already been predetermined before the jury was ever even impaneled that 13 and 14 would be the alternates. And in this case, it's telling that neither party objected to the juror being excused. Neither party inquired further. The court announced that juror number three had gotten sick and actually even used the words, "You probably know that," suggesting that, this wasn't a surprise, that others had seen that juror number three was sick, and moved on with the trial. I would note that this distinction between hardship and administrative excusals and for cause and peremptory challenges, that's supported by the statute and the court rule. Both RSW 236.110 and Court Rule 6.5 use mandatory language of shall. It both place a continuous obligation on the trial court to ensure that a jury is comprised of members who are physically fit to serve. And here we had a juror that was not fit to serve. Dismissing this sick juror had nothing to do with the juror's neutrality or the party's motivation. In fact, the parties didn't ask to dismiss this juror. The juror was dismissed because the juror was physically unfit to serve. In short, with the first prong, Mr. Turpin's public trial right was not implicated by what was essentially a hardship excusal. But turning to the second prong,
do we get to the second prong if we agree with you on the first?
No, you don't. You don't. But I'm happy to talk about it, just in case you have any concerns about that. Even if the public trial right is implicated, there is no closure here. Mr. Turpin bears the burden under the John Gay case of conclusively showing that a closure occurred based on the facts and the record. The reviewing court cannot and will not presume that there was a closure. In Gomez, the Supreme Court recently held that the record must establish that the courtroom and the proceedings were closed by an express order of the judge. And
why resist appellate counsel's efforts to arrive at an agreed narrative report of proceeding? If it's not going to be controversial, it doesn't seem like that would be any real concern to the state. If it is going to be controversial, then that kind of, don't we need to know more about what happened?
Well, here the state's position is that the record is sufficient for the court to rule on the merits. As Judge Cox was saying, that if the court finds that the public trial was not implicated, the public trial right was not implicated, then we don't reach the closure issue. But here, everybody agrees that the dismissal happened off the record. So there's no record to reconstruct. It's unlike the case that Mr. Turpin cites, the Tilton case, where the court reporter accidentally forgot to turn the tape recorder on when the defendant was testifying and during most of his cross. And the issue on appeal was whether or not trial counsel was ineffective for failing to raise a dim cap or an intoxication defense. That's not the case here. We all agree that there are facts and evidence that are not in the record. And if that's the case, then the proper course is a PRP, a personal restraint petition. We don't usually reconstruct the record on direct appeal. And so that's why the state has resisted it. I would just note that if there is no closure, then under John Gay and Gomez, the Washington Supreme Court has held that you analyze the case as a matter of courtroom operations, in which the trial court has broad discretion. And here, the trial court acted within its discretion and under its continuous obligation to dismiss a physically unfit juror. Unless the court has any further questions, I would just ask that this court affirm Mr. Turpin's convictions and hold that Mr. Turpin's Polk trial right was not implicated by the excusal of a sick juror, and that even if it was, there was no closure. Thank you.
I'd like to first return to an issue that was broached by Judge Spearman here. This idea that, well, because the trial judge in this case subsequently after the recess, after the juror was already excused, goes on the record and tells the jury, oh, okay, we got rid of the juror because of sickness, okay? And that somehow does not either, provides no footing for the logic prong of the public trial right to take root, or that, maybe that doesn't constitute a closure because what was happened in during that recess was subsequently put on the record. And on those points, I want to point out that the public rights jurisprudence goes the opposite direction on that, which is that before the closure takes place, the trial judge should analyze the bone club factors to justify the closure if that proceeding is implicating the public trial right. If the judge in that scenario doesn't do that bone club analysis, closes the proceeding, but then subsequently puts on the record what happened, that's still a public trial violation.
As I understand it, this situation arose during the recess. Is that correct? So there was no opportunity to go on the record or do anything before the court was arguably closed. I mean, it was already in recess.
No, I don't disagree with that, Your Honor.
So that still puts us back in a situation where the judge, under your argument, it seems to me the judge is restricted and cannot do anything until court is back in session after the lunch hour.
The judge can certainly take steps to ensure the comfort of that juror, whether it's sending that juror to the hospital or sending the juror home. That can be done. But again, if it's judicial,
even though it's a practical matter, it's clear that the juror's gone and not coming back. Just as a formality, the judge cannot actually officially acknowledge that until court's back in session.
Well, what Your Honor is calling a formality, I'm calling vital to the public trial right. You know, when a member of the public is interested in formalities, is interested in seeing that the formalities are adhered to. I mean, the formality is the process.
Mm-hmm.
The process for removing an impaneled juror, that process exists. It's in the statute. It's in the court rule. Members of the public should be able to view that process as it unfolds, at least in terms of the official act of excusing a juror. The basis for the removal at all. And, my opposing counsel concedes there is potential for chicanery here. There's no dispute on this record that the judge actually did something wrong here in removing this juror. But the point is, how does the public perceive what happened here? And if the public perceives that something was not done in the open that should have been done in the open, then that goes to supporting that the public trial act was violated here. Thank you.
Thank you.